New information today about who could profit if the White House ratchets down the rules governing Wall Street. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. We have been covering President Trump ordering an assessment of financial regulations with the view to scaling back rules put in after the last financial crisis. New research by RBC Capital Markets now finds that the half dozen biggest banks might turn $100 billion in capital back to shareholders if the Trump deregulation actually happens. This is a delightful prospect for stockholders in those banks, but some critics worry about future stability. Professor Cornelius Hurley watches this. He's director of Boston University's Center for Finance, Law, and Policy.
They're called too big to fail for a reason. Their shareholders may be at risk, but their creditors are not. So as a result, they have lower borrowing costs, and they are able to engage in activities that other institutions that are not too big to fail cannot do.
I see what you're saying. And so this notion of, okay, it's our money, we get to turn it back over to whoever we want, probably our shareholders, critics are saying maybe not so fast.
One of Trump's principles in his executive order last week was to prevent future bailouts. I think those are the exact words. I can think of no better way to prevent future bailouts than to take this $100 billion and use it as a leverage to downsize the too-big-to-fail banks so that they are no longer too big to fail.
So in our attention to the process of deregulation and getting rid of parts of Dodd-Frank, there's also the issue of who is appointed to the bodies that regulate the financial system.
Janet Yellen's term expires almost a year from today. There are two vacancies on the seven-member Federal Reserve Board. The Comptroller of the Currency's term expires in about a month and a half. So it's not going to take massive legislation to wreak massive changes.
The Fed and the Comptroller are both bank regulators, of course. Cornelius Hurley at Boston University Center for Finance, Law, and Policy. Thank you. Note, Goldman Sachs stock is up 37% since the presidential election. Citi up 20%. J.P. Morgan up 28%. Tax preparer H&R Block has been losing ground to online competitors like TurboTax. Its answer is not just software, but artificial intelligence in the form of IBM's Watson technology, Marketplace's Mariel Segarra reports.
The H&R Block experience is not going to change that much. You'll still be sitting in a cubicle talking to a person, but now that person will input your data into the Watson computer system. George Guastello is VP of Product Management at H&R Block.
And on the client monitor, it will highlight those areas where the tax pro will want to dig further.
Watson can do that because it knows the more than 74,000 pages of federal tax code, and it'll be constantly learning. Brian Utsi from the Kellogg Graduate School of Management says that's a big help for tax preparers.
Watson would be like the second brain that would allow them to become familiar with and ask questions about tax code that they otherwise can't commit to memory.
Which means H&R Block could potentially rival the services of a professional accountant.
But may be able to offer the same services at a lower cost and a larger scale.
Of course, there's an even lower cost option. Do your taxes on paper. In New York, I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
First, a salute this morning to all of you who got up early for work despite watching the end of that overtime last night. But when the parade is over, confetti swept up, the NFL has a longer-term problem. Where are the players of the future going to come from with parents worried about the safety of their kids who might play football? Marketplace's Andy Euler reports.
Tom Thompson grew up in Kansas. Then he moved to Dallas. Now he's got a young son, Cooper. Tom played high school football in Kansas and says it's different where he lives now. He says he knew it was something of a religion in Texas.
But what I didn't realize was how early they were expected to play.
Tom says when his son was five, a neighbor with a boy about the same age asked him when he was going to sign Cooper up for football.
And I thought he meant like flag football, but it was full tackle football.
He and his wife decided to wait. Now Cooper's 12 and still just plays soccer. Tom says all the negative stories about concussions and depression in football helped solidify their decision to keep Cooper out of the game. They're not the only ones. Youth participation's been on the decline for at least a decade. That's one of the reasons USA Football is talking about changing the rules for kids. Scott Hallenbeck is the group's executive director.
If, in fact, we can find that this leads to a safer environment, well, then terrific.
The changes are still in the pilot phase. Among the proposals are fewer players on the field, no kickoffs, no punts, and no three-point stances. You know, where players put one hand on the ground before rushing after the quarterback. Sarah Fields studies sports injury at the University of Colorado, Denver.
The decision to have the players start in a more upright position, intuitively, I think, could be the most helpful.
Because little kids in three-point stances lead with their heads. That's bad for their necks and their brains. Tom Thompson says he thinks a change in the rules is a good idea, especially after watching some of those little kids in Texas play.
I'm not seeing the fundamentals in the play. It seems like the culture wrapped around that is still this mentality of hit as hard as you can.
USA Football doesn't have a timeline for when these new versions of youth football will be an option for parents. And there's certainly no talk of changing the rules of the game in high school, college, or the pros. Yet. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.